This podcast is brought to you by Erickson Immigration Group. Welcome to Immigration Nerds. Today, we explore the 2020 Spring Regulatory Agenda released by the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, which resides in the Executive Office. The purpose of this agenda, as stated, is to amend and eliminate regulations that are ineffective, duplicative, and obsolete. This is being done in order to promote economic growth, innovation, and protect individual liberties. I talked with Erickson Immigration Group's Managing Director, Justin Parsons, to discuss just how this will be accomplished in the eyes of the administration and what tone this sets for the rest of the year. I'm Ian Gaines. Come join us beyond borders. The Trump administration's unified agenda of regulatory and deregulatory actions was released last week. This embodies a list of programs that the administration plans to either remove or alter in the coming year. So, as stated, this is a part of the administration's ongoing commitment to fundamental regulatory reform and reorientation toward reducing unnecessary regulatory burdens on the American people. So, we have you here to talk about what is deemed to be unnecessary regulatory burdens.
Yeah.
At first glance, was there any one program being removed that stuck out to you immediately?
So, I mean, I think upon first glance, what I could say is that, you know, every year they release this proposed regulatory agenda in terms of, you know, proposed regulations or rulemaking that they intend to do. And I think, you know, from this year, just kind of taking a look at the number of immigration items that are on here. But I think one of the, I would say, the most striking things that I noticed off the bat was just kind of the pure number of immigration related agenda items that's on this list. Clearly, I think that this administration, you know, for election reasons, made, you know, immigration a hot topic. But I think they're continuing with their foot on the gas pedal to not only in the legal sphere, but also the folks who are undocumented as well, kind of going after those items as well. So, yeah, I think just the pure volume of all the items that are on this is just, it's a shocking to be honest with you.
Right. I'm not sure if you wanted to go down one by one, and we can do that later. But how has the regulatory agenda tied back into the executive order that was released earlier this year? Because we talked about that and was wondering, how does that coincide with what was already released?
Yeah, so I mean, what I would say is, I think with the proclamations and the executive orders, what the administration does is, you know, they see what legally they can get by with, you know, just from executive orders or, you know, what they can legally do within the INA. And then anything that they can't do by executive order or proclamation, they'll target through this proposed rulemaking. So, for example, there's item 1650 AC 13, which talks about proposed rulemaking for the H-1B program, where they discuss strengthening the H-1B visa classification program, which sets out to revise the definition of specialty occupation, employment, employee, employer relationship, and also potential additional wage requirements on employers. So, that is something that they couldn't just do by executive order, so they have to essentially tackle it by regulation.
Right.
One of the things that they're going to try to do is change, you know, which positions can classify for an H-1B for specialty occupation, and make it more difficult for individuals to get H-1Bs. You know, the whole issue of employment and an employer-employee relationship is going to target consulting firms and their ability to sponsor people on H-1B visas. So I think you're going to go see some targeted actions here in the regulations in terms of, you know, making it more difficult for individuals to qualify for H-1Bs. And then additionally, they're going to prioritize, I would say, companies that are sponsoring individuals and paying them more money, and they're going to make it more difficult for companies to sponsor entry-level positions for H-1Bs. And you know, obviously, those are positions where people don't make as much money. So it's definitely, at least in the proposed rulemaking, DHS is signaling that they want to change the rules to make it more difficult for H-1Bs and then require companies to pay more for H-1B holders.
Correct. And it also, what is on the table is like H-4 visas. So removing H-4 dependent spouses from the class of aliens eligible for employment authorization. that's on the table, as well as the F1 visa. So it's targeting multiple aspects.
Yeah, I mean, the H4 EDs have been subject to litigation, you know, ever since the Obama administration passed the H4 rule. So we've kind of been watching it for, I'd say, you know, the past 3.5 years, really, in terms of that we knew something was going to come, whether is they were going to, you know, the administration was going to try to do something by executive order, or whether they would try to do it through rulemaking. But yeah, one of the items is to eliminate the H4 ED, which is work authorization for spouses of H1B visa holders, which, you know, I think all H4 visa holders with EDs, I think there's about 100,000 of them in the U.S., have been kind of looking in the rearview mirror for the past 4 years, unfortunately. So this signifies that the current administration wants to release a proposed rule on this.
Got it. And then also the F1 visa for students, they're thinking about reforming that. I was kind of just curious about it. So ICE, they plan to change up some of the procedures of it to reduce fraud. So what are they seeing from this program that they think could be exploited, or what are they trying to protect?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think schools that pop up, you know, like in any industry that's out there where there's going to be some bad actors. And I think that there are, you know, schools that pop up and, you know, maybe take advantage of foreign students in terms of allowing them to enroll in programs in exchange for, you know, F visas or OPT. But USCIS has kind of monitored these schools over time, and any school that's found to be violating the F program, they could lose their ability to issue Fs and issue, you know, work authorization. So
it's always been swift action.
Yeah. In my mind, this is a bit, you know, it's a bit of a red herring. Most immigration hawks out there like to kind of point to diploma mills or whatnot. I don't disagree with the fact that they're probably out there. Do I think that they're occurring in the large degree that a lot of these immigration hawks think? Probably not. And I think that, you know, over the years, USCIS has kind of monitored and done enough compliance to monitor certain schools. And so I think at the end of the day, you know, any sort of FRM program that's going to curtail, you know, the issuance of student visas is probably going to do more harm to universities who are, you know, attracting international talent and ultimately hurt the U.S. I don't think the administration is taking into account the degree that certain universities rely on international students, the fact that they're making money, the fact that they're employing, you know, U.S. professors, the fact that some of these schools have, you know, are in college towns where there's industry that relying on schools. So I just think it's very short-sighted for, you know, for this administration to send home all these international students home. I just don't understand, like, why you would want to hurt universities and colleges in the U.S. and decrease their business. I just don't get it. It's a self-inflicted wound, and I just really don't understand the economics of it.
True, and I guess that will be a debate that we could hear from the other side, because plenty of statistics and research that immigrants provide more jobs, they create more jobs, they create more businesses, that creates entire industries, which helps economic growth. So I'm interested. Maybe we can have another sit down with someone else who takes the other position to explain where are those numbers coming from in terms of promoting these actions put in place. How does that promote economic growth? And we can look into the numbers and research. I'm interested to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't think that there's been a lot of analysis or investigation before making some of these decisions. And I'm strictly speaking on the, you know, the F side.
And I
would probably, you know, broaden my analysis to the H-1B side as well. There was an article, I believe this weekend, released about how much H-1B holders pay in taxes, you know, and it's significant amounts of money that the U.S. government is losing by keeping a lot of these H-1B holders out. So yeah, you kind of wonder what's going on and why we're trying to kill our colleges, our universities by doing things like this. I'm not certain what the end game is.
Okay. So during this time of uncertainty and thinking about what procedures will be rolled out or what procedures will be removed, How are you advising during this time? What steps can visa holders take in order to be as equipped as possible within this new climate?
Well, I mean, I think the one thing I would have to say is what happens just in terms of timeline is that, mm-hmm. you know, the text of the rule has to be released, and then there has to be allowed for a 30 or 60 day public comment period. And I think right. what we're starting to see is we're starting to see kind of the pendulum. It's debatable upon kind of the, you know, the public opinion on immigration, but you're starting to see, you know, the pendulum kind of sway in terms of individuals don't think that immigration is bad, you know, especially with highly skilled workers and just, you know, immigration in general. So you're starting to see kind of the public polling show that more individuals are in favor of more immigration, you know, due to declining birth rates, due to the need for certain skills within the economy. And I think people are really kind of starting to pay attention to the immigration debate and issues in general. The proclamation has been a bit of a wake-up call for companies, not only in the tech industry, but just everywhere in terms of, you know, the importance of putting pressure on the administration from a business standpoint to make sure that visas aren't taken away, that a lot of companies rely on these for skills that U.S. workers just don't have. For individuals, it's really important to let, you know, your employer to know how big of a deal certain things are. You know, if your spouse loses his or her H4ED work authorization, you know, it causes a lot of stress within the household with a spouse not working. 60 or 70% of the H4 visa holders have advanced degrees. So you're losing, you know, essentially a good chunk of the workforce that has an advanced degree. So I would just say for individuals, it's just like super important to talk to your employer to let them know how big of a deal, whether it's individually to write letters in opposition or in favor if there's a good regulation, or also to join coalitions, you know, that will stand against any sort of bad policy that hurts the U.S. economy.
I think that's wise advice. And I think the statistic that you were hinting towards, because I might have read the same article, it said that spending by all H-1B workers in the U.S. amounts to a total of more than $76 billion annually here in the U.S. So hopefully they have calculated and incorporated those figures into their economic research and statistics. So.
Yeah, and I think, unfortunately, I think it's a very few number of people in terms of who are pushing sort of a non, you know, immigration agenda. I think that they're banking on that the companies are just going to hire U.S. workers. And I think what they don't understand is because a lot of these folks are not, you know, they've worked in policy jobs their entire life, you know, kind of worked in a lot of these corporations. And I think what they don't understand is you take away highly skilled workforce, you take away a major source of talent, they're not going to hire U.S. workers and spend 5 or 10 years training them. They're going to go to another country and they're going to take their jobs and their companies somewhere else. So I think that, you know, a lot of the hawks that are pushing for less immigration, thinking that it's going to, you know, help U.S. workers get hired, well, there's just kind of no evidence that is the case. So.
All right. All right, Justin, you can go to reginfo.gov. That's reginfo.gov. They have the full list of each of the programs that they are lining up to regulate. There's a full search bar and a full list explaining each one of the programs. So if you're so inclined to go through it one by one, it's quite a hefty list. So for people who want to do their own personal research. But Justin, I appreciate you coming on and just making a little bit more sense of this in the times that we're at, and a little bit of the background knowledge of why these procedures are being put in place.
Yep. Thank you, Ian.
Thank you to lead researcher Con Branch, assistant producers Luke Bianco and David White, and music by Brandon Williams. Follow Immigration Nerds on Twitter at @IMMNerds and Erickson Immigration Group on LinkedIn to join in the conversation. I'm Ian Gaines. See you next week.